You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
What happens when you combine two wonderful comic playwrights, Molière and David Ives, who've been separated by a mere four centuries? The result, called The School for Lies, has had audiences at the Classic Stage Company on East 13th Street laughing happily over the past month as not only canapes but bodies fly all over the stage. The production has been extended through this coming Sunday, the 29th, which means that there's only a few more days to catch it, alas. I'm very happy to welcome its two leading cast members, Mamie Gummer, who plays the deliciously witty aristocrat Selamine, and Hamish Linklater, who stars as Frank, a drama critic who seems to despise almost everyone and everything. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Don't be too grumpy, Hamish. This is loosely based on Molière's classic, The Misanthrope. Did you go back and read it?
Absolutely not.
You would have found it too confusing?
Yeah.
I think I Wikipedia'd it to kind of refresh. I read it in college, but...
Yeah, and then I asked Mamie to tell me what the Wikipedia, give me a brush of that.
But had you, neither of you performed anything by Molière before?
No.
No, I always thought Molière was sort of Shakespeare light.
We're going to get about 20 emails right after this. People, what? Molière was a great, great playwright. Although we can't really tell because he wrote it in French and he rhymed it. Just as David Ives has rhymed it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Same rhyming couplets. And, I mean, there's a fabulous translation by Richard Wilbur, which is sort of our best English language one, I guess, or it's the one that's used the most.
You've been told.
He's a great poet.
Yeah, a fantastic poet. But, yeah, according to Mamie's Wikipedia research, it's a very, very good translation, and everyone should pick that up if they want to know what the original playwright actually intended.
No, but before we proceed, Mamie, have you ever Wikipedia'd yourself? You know that they don't get everything right.
I have. I may have, maybe last night at around 1:30.
This is all done in verse, and it's delivered at breakneck speed. How long did it take to master it all?
I still feel like I'm finding it and finding different entryways into the verse, you know, because it's easy to fall back on the rhythm and the pattern of the language, but things are constantly kind of bubbling up, I think.
Well, Hamish, you've done Shakespeare, and he does a lot of rhyming as well, and the trick is to forget the rhyming?
I think you sort of lean into the rhythm and lean into the rhyme at first because it'll put you outside your comfort zone or you'll find something. You sort of find this kind of hyper-naturalism maybe if you put yourself into these uncomfortable rhythms. And David's written in rhyming couplets, iambic pentameter, and iambic pentameter is sort of just the most perfect rhythm. It's about the length of a breath, which is perfect. It's about the length of a good thought, which is really right, those five rhythms. And then it goes ba-bump, 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 which is your heartbeat.
And we often speak in iambic pentameter without even realizing it.
Exactly. So you can kind of learn it kind of easy because it clangs on your ear when you've done it wrong, when you hit the rhythm wrong, or when you've messed up a rhyming couplet if you're not rhyming. So it does... Although there is a large bulk of text, it does sink in.
There are also inner rhymes. Not everything is rhymed at the end of every sentence.
Yeah, it's got a lot of sort of... it's very like Eminem, you know. There's a lot of internal... it comments on itself internally.
That's
a lot.
The rap on Molière. Yeah. You're attired in 17th century-ish costumes, but the dialogue has been wickedly and often anachronistically updated. Mamie, at one point, you're dishing vapid valley girls, a self-centered male attorney. It must be hard at times not to laugh at when you're delivering some of those lines.
Yeah, but actually in that instance, I kind of can because I think that the whole thing is, it is so enjoyable and we're having such a great time. And if we're having, it's like a great party. You know, that you want everyone to come in and enjoy along with you. You know, everyone in the audience is invited to come play in this, charade game.
And you never trip up on any of these lines?
I do. My little sister came to see the show the other day, and I could hear her giggling through that whole section, you know, when I'm doing these, like, Jersey Shore impersonations. And that screwed me up because it is such a tiny, well, not, you know, but you the
it's
audience
theater
is
in
like,
the round.
Yeah, it's on the stage with you. So that can throw you.
But. Is that you say could throw you? A lot of actors like being really close to the audience because you can hear every murmur, every gasp, every even little giggle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting. It's really thrilling and invigorating. But it's also like if you see your, I don't know, ex-boyfriend sitting in the first row and you didn't know was coming, then that can be kind of like jarring.
Especially right? If it's your ex-boyfriend, right?
Yeah.
Some purists might complain that you're treating Molière too casually.
Mm. Yeah. My godmother came the other night and she directed it, I think, in French, the Misanthrope. She had an issue or two, but even she couldn't deny. I think the Molière would be kind of psyched. The spirit is really well honored, you know.
Well, in the end, it is very funny and it's like an homage to Molière, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, David's cleaned up a couple of things that maybe Molière didn't really pay attention to in his first draft.
The more complicated plot devices.
Yeah, there's more plot.
What's it like to perform in those costumes? Maybe it looks like you're in a tight and uncomfortable corset underneath that
no,
very
does
lovely
it really,
gown.
Does it look like that?
No.
Do I look uncomfortable?
Well, maybe
you wear it like a second skin.
Thank you, bless you.
A satin you. Second skin.
It's stunning. There are a few moments where when I have this first entrance and people actually audibly gasp because yeah. It is so gorgeous and how it fits into the whole every element of the design of this show is so striking, I think, in that our stage is all white and then my dress is white to kind of claim the space and to, you know, that association.
Yeah, the first couple times when she made that entrance, my back is to her and I heard that gasp, that sort of crazy intake of breath, and I thought, wow, I am good. And then I turned around and I saw, oh, that's what that is.
Well, so actors have told me that the costume actually will affect the performance.
Yeah, it can. It was. At first, I felt a little bit hindered by it.
But it also can make you feel like you're more in the character.
Yeah, eventually it did. I mean, at first it was kind of constricting and it was intimidating, you know, to have to fill this beautiful cloth.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, there's a lot of physical humor in this performance. You have to fall to the floor a number of times and act while you're lying on your back in one scene with your face covered by Arsinoe's skirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I didn't have to do that. Basically, any role I get a chance to play, I try to figure out how to fall down as much as possible.
This is something that was worked out in rehearsal?
Yeah. I was like, well, yeah, I could fall down here, and I could probably fall down here, and I'll probably be tired at this point. So, yeah, why don't I just lie down for a moment over here? Also, I'm wearing heels all the way through this thing, so it's hard to stay erect.
Oh,
is
that hard for you? It's the heels?
You have no sympathy, do you? Yeah. Well, men don't understand that. But are you black and blue?
No, actually, the set is really well cushioned. Mm. I think they were expecting a pratfall fiesta, so it's pretty well cushioned.
Well, there's also, I mentioned, canopies go flying all over the place, and they're all over the stage by the end of the performance. I assumed after Act 1 they'd be swept up, but they aren't because Act 2 picks up right after Act 1 leaves off. I would assume you have to be careful not slide or slip on any of them.
Yeah. Well,
Walter was really keen to have the detritus of the comedy, you know, stay out there. So, yeah, it's a little bit of an appetizer minefield. But
we were very careful that they're made of foam, so they're very soft.
Oh, you can't really eat them.
No, and if you know... one goes flying into the audience, as they do, mm-hmm. No one's going to lose an eye.
Yeah, we should point out that your ex-boyfriend probably got more than one or two canopies falling on him about that performance. Both of your characters have wickedly sharp tongues. Do you do you feel your characters are more alike than not?
Yes.
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 So, although
alike each other, like
yes.
That
yes,
yeah, he has this beautiful line. What is it? We're like two stars whose auras blur.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully from the very beginning, it's like that. What is that? Pride and Prejudice. You know, when they meet that first time, and they both have that. You know, it should be that thing where you're like, oh, they're gonna end up together. Oh, finally. Oh, good. When's it gonna happen? When's it
even
gonna
though happen? they've been duped about each other, mm-hmm. but we, the audience, know that this is the couple that's going to wind up together at the end of the show.
Yeah. Sometimes you need a good duping.
Now, what is it that's made Frank such a curmudgeon? I mean, he's determined to tell the truth all the time, but he's like one of those people. Frank is the perfect name that David Ives has given him. When somebody says, can I be Frank? You know they're going to say something terrible.
Yeah. I think actually David has a great deal of Frank in him. I have a good deal of Frank in me too. But, you know, he's been around the block for a while. And I think also if you've done New York theater for as long as he has, which is about 400 years, I think you do get to a nice level of not people hating per se or... but you know, you get
hardening.
He's got some acid.
Well, his name in the Molière play is not Frank or Francois; it's Alceste.
Yes, exactly.
And Amy, you're Salamine, or Salamine?
Salamène.
Salamène. Mm-hmm. Lampoons people who, as she says, begged for barbecuing.
Mm-hmm.
But why does she do that?
Well, I think they both these characters have had a little heart. Hardening, you know, in her case, she lost her husband and is in grieving, and it's made her angry, I think.
Do you see any connection between your part here and the recurring role you have in The Good Wife? Both women seem to know how to twist men around their little fingers, although the lawyer you play on the TV show plays at being coy, and
yeah.
Salamène does not play coy.
Right. They are both very clever, and I think that the character, the girl in The Good Wife, she's the Midwestern. She kind of leans on like this kind of.
I'm from Kansas.
I'm Michigan.
Michigan?
You big city folks, you're crazy. And Salamène, I think, really relishes in her. She's very cosmopolitan and very sophisticated.
But one might leave the theater thinking that women are smarter than men.
Oh, really?
Is that? Do you think that's true of most Molière plays?
Hmm.
Yeah. Guys are pretty dumb. But you see that also. I mean, that's like in any sitcom you see on TV, too. It's like Ray Romano is stupid and Patricia Heaton is smart.
He's not stupid.
He's not as smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mamie, how young were you when you first got the acting bug? I'm sure watching your mother perform must have been an inspiration, but... Your father is a wonderful artist.
I know. Why
any
can't
chance
I draw?
You might have become a painter or a sculptor?
I know. I tried. I tried my hand. In high school, as you do, because I didn't care to do my homework, so I did other things, and I did plays, and I did took some drawing classes, and I just really, while everyone else was sort of doing the plays to get out of, like, having to do sports or, you know, play hockey. I was, like, really poured myself into these things, and I don't know.
Did your mother give you any advice?
Sure.
Don't chew the scenery.
Yeah. She did say, after she came to see this show, I was lamenting the fact that our stage is so bare and there's nothing for me to pick up or, you know. And she said, no, just your cues.
Well, you did have a wonderful breakthrough role in Evening.
Thank you.
The screenplay by Susan Minot and Michael Cunningham. I mean, that cast is a great way to really begin a career. Vanessa Redgrave, Natasha Richardson, Toni Collette, and Claire Danes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a dream. It was a kind of a magical entree into this. Whole thing.
And now you have another series as well off the map?
Mm-hmm. I did. Although that's no more.
It's now off the map.
It's now off.
And Hamish, you've been in quite a few television shows, Gideon's Crossing, Pushing Daisies, Ugly Betty, The New Adventures of Old Christine. And you're also doing a lot of live theater. You've been in the park how many times now?
Just the past two summers I was there, and then we did the rep last year, so that was great.
Going from Shakespeare to TV sitcom?
Yes. That's, you know, that's a natural. He loves sitcom Shakespeare, I think. No, it's good. You get the live audience with the multi-camera sitcom, so it does feel like you're putting on a play each week.
Well, this play not only stars Mamie Gummer and Hamish Linklater, but also Hoon Lee, Allison Fraser, Rick Holmes, Jen Gamateza, Stephen Boyer, Matthew Marr, and Frank Hartz, and Lauren Kurinskas, is it?
She's in the company.
She's an assistant stage manager.
Yeah. She's the one that goes around and cleans up all the canapes after.
Well, and Allison Fraser, just wonderful with you. That's some great
terrific
comedy.
Yeah.
I want to thank you both so much for being with us. And the only sad thing is that the School for Lies is closing this Sunday.
Yeah.
And I know there are people who are hoping that it'll be picked up because it's a hit. A week. Is it this Sunday or a week from this Sunday?
This Sunday.
This Sunday, the 29th.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. We're among those people hoping it'll be picked up.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Mamie Gummer and Hamish Linklater. The School for Lies, adapted from the Molière classic, The Misanthrope, by David Ives, is at the CSC at 136 East 13th Street. And if you want ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. ¶¶